Hey guys, my name is Miles, and I am so excited to tell you about my true crime podcast, Forensic Miles. My co-host and I investigate the cases covered in every episode of Forensic Files. You've seen the show, you know the crime, but is there more to the story? Let's find out. Check us out on Instagram at Forensic Miles, Miles with a Y, or listen on Spotify or Anchor. See you there.
Okay, before we get started with episode 13 here, it is time for a quick shout out. These are people who have left 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to Kelsey and Taylor from the Morning Mugshot Podcast. So definitely check them out. And if you would like a shout out on the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts with your name, where you're from, and I will give you a shout out. All right, now on with episode 13. Brian Schaefer was a 27-year-old medical student at Ohio State University. It was the start of spring break on March 31st, 2006, and Brian had plans to go on a trip to Miami in a couple of days with his girlfriend, a fellow Ohio State medical student. The night of March 31st, however, he would celebrate the start of spring break by having dinner with his father, Randy, before meeting up with a friend to go bar hopping later on that night. Brian met up with his friend at a bar called the Ugly Tuna Saluna, and the two moved along to several other bars over time that night, before meeting another friend and going back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna. At some point, Brian becomes separated from his friends, and at 2 a.m. when they still don't spot Brian leaving, his friends assumed he left without telling them and went home on his own. However, over the next couple of days, his father and girlfriend attempt to contact Brian multiple times, but hear no answer. It is when Brian doesn't show up for the flight to Miami that he is reported missing. It would be then that a truly baffling missing persons investigation would be launched by the Columbus Police Department. When checking the surveillance footage from the Ugly Tuna Saluna, Brian is last seen on there talking to two women out front of the bar before he turns and heads back inside. There are cameras at each entrance and exit for the bar, and Brian never shows up on any surveillance again. It's as if he literally vanished into thin air. Different theories would emerge as to what happened to Brian Schaefer. His mother had recently passed away, and he was dealing with some depression because of it. Could it be that caused him to commit suicide? Could he have snuck off to start a new life somewhere else? Or could harm have come to him inside the bar, and he was disposed of without being seen? 14 years have passed, and no trace of Brian Schaefer has ever been found. This is episode 13 of the Still Unknown podcast, The Disappearance of Brian Schaefer. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 13 of the Still Unknown podcast, a podcast about unsolved murders, disappearances, and unexplained deaths. I am Joe Schwartz, the host of this podcast. In this episode, I will be talking about a case which is a true obsession case for me, the baffling disappearance of Brian Schaefer. If you listen to other true crime podcasts, there's a pretty good chance you know this case, as many other well-known podcasts and shows such as Dateline have covered this case. I'm including multiple links in the show notes to different articles and blogs on this case, but a blog I'm including a link to that does a great job of discussing much of the story is one I'll be taking a lot from it for this episode. The name of the blog is Talk Murder With Me, and it's run by Natalie. Unsure of what her last name is, I've just seen her go by Natalie. So check out her blog at talkmurderwithme.com and follow her on Instagram at talkmurderwithme. So now let's talk about the disappearance of Brian Schaefer. Okay, I'm happy to be joined in this episode by Shannon Winings, who is about as obsessed with this case as I am. So welcome, Shannon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners, tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
Sure. I actually work with the Columbus Police Department, which is where the Brian Schaefer case is currently at. And I'm just an analyst, so as a forward, I haven't worked on the case. There's no conflict of interest or anything like that. But I did hear about it and am completely obsessed with it.
So at what point did you hear about it? Because I believe I didn't hear about it until... It's one of these cases that just about every true crime podcast you can think of has covered this at some point. So I'm sure I heard it on True Crime Garage or Generation Y, or like one of any different type of podcast you can think of has probably covered this case. And it hearing the details of it is just so mind baffling to me.
Yeah, it really is. I actually heard it when I was going to get my undergrad for criminal justice, and I interned at the police department and kind of heard the name kind of following around and looked into it, and it is just crazy. So it would have been about 10 years after the case happened when I first heard about it, and then ever since then, I, you know, picking up what I can. The case comes back in the media almost every year and just seeing where it goes from there.
Yeah, in I guess the reason, like, it's such a big deal is just how does it happen? Like, how is it possible?
Yeah, I'm sure listeners will feel the same way when they go ahead and listen to this, but it just, to me, it doesn't seem possible that you can just walk in somewhere and not come back out. So,
yeah. So, all right, well, we'll get into the story here. So, Brian Randall Schaefer, he was the firstborn son to Randy and Renee Schaefer on February 25th, 1979 in Pickerton, Ohio, a suburb of Columbus. He graduated from high school in 1997 and went to Ohio State University, where he graduated 6 years later with a degree in microbiology. He followed that up by becoming a medical student at the Ohio State University College of Medicine in 2004. It was at that time that he met and began dating a fellow medical student named Alexis Wagner. Brian loved music and loved to play music. He had a tattoo on his upper right arm of the cover art from the Pearl Jam single Alive, which Pearl Jam was his favorite band. He was also a fan of Jimmy Buffett and would say that his real goal in life was to play the type of music that Jimmy Buffett plays and live a relaxed lifestyle. And he would joke that he chose a medical career as a backup plan. In March of 2006, during his second year as a med student, Brian experienced a personal tragedy when his mother, Renee, passed away from a rare form of bone cancer. Her death was definitely hard for him to handle, but friends said that Brian appeared to be putting on a brave face. Also, spring break was coming up at the end of the month, and he and Alexis had planned for a trip to Miami for it. It was believed by those who knew the couple that Brian was planning to propose marriage during that trip. So we get to the night of Friday, March 31st, the start of spring break. Brian had just wrapped up a stressful week of exams, having pulled all late night studying. Not to mention he was still dealing with his mother's recent death. So needless to say, he could really use a break right about now. That night, his father, Randy, went out with Brian for a steak dinner to celebrate the start of spring break. Brian had plans after dinner to meet up with friends and go out drinking. Randy felt that might not be a good idea because he noticed how tired Brian was after the grueling week he had just had. But of course, Brian was an adult and Randy would let Brian make his own decisions.
I read somewhere that he didn't even really voice that to Brian at all. He just kind of kept it to himself in the back of his head, so he never really actually got to say anything to prevent his son from going out.
Yeah. And even if he did say something like, I don't know if it would have done good anyway.
Yeah, he is a college student. It probably wouldn't have changed the process of events, but
yeah, he graduated from Ohio State, and he was a second year med student. He's 27 years old. And yeah. I mean, me at 27, if my dad's like, hey, maybe that's not a good idea, I'm like, yeah, I'll decide that myself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But yeah, so Brian said goodnight to Randy and headed to the Ugly Tuna Saloon, where he met his friend William Clint Florence at around 9:30. Now, I have the Ugly Tuna Saloon, the original one is closed down now, and the owner ended up opening Ugly Tuna 2 at another location. But have you ever been to the Ugly Tuna Saloon, or are you familiar with the area that it's in?
I am familiar with that area because it's actually right by OSU. I'm a little bit more familiar with where he goes after, which is the Park Street Arena District. That's where Nationwide Arena, the Huntington Baseball Arena is. That's where a lot of the clubs and a lot of the kids go drinking. Now, I was not around when he... I was not in college when he first went missing, so I didn't actually get to go to the original Ugly Tuna Saloon. So, missed a little bit there, but I did hear that it was upstairs, which is a little bit unique, and they have an escalator going into it.
Yeah, and it's located on the second story of the South Campus Gateway Complex, which is slightly south of the Ohio State campus.
Yes, the whole area is really, I mean, college kids are everywhere. All the sororities and the frat houses are there. And so, I mean, really highly populated.
Yeah. And, the Ugly, it's a large bar area where the bar is right in the middle. And, the entrance is accessed by going up the escalator, turning right, and walking across a small landing. Anyone entering or leaving would be caught on surveillance. And so he goes to meet his friend Clint. We'll call him Clint around 9:30. And they hang out there for a brief bit. They end up going bar hopping. Are you aware of like how many bars they end up hitting up? It's several bars. I know.
Yes. I don't know how many off the top of my head, but if they went from where they were over to the Arena District, which is a little bit off campus, and then I heard that they went to the Short North area, which also is right in that area, but they essentially made a loop. So I can imagine they hit quite a few bars. That area is just littered with bars.
Yeah. So, well, every bar that they end up stopping at, they take a shot at each one. So, fair to say they get pretty intoxicated.
Yeah, absolutely. By the point that they get back around to the Ugly Tuna, they have got to be hammered.
Yeah. So, at around 10 p.m., Brian called Alexis. She was in Toledo that night to visit family. He said he loved her and was excited for their trip to Miami in a couple of days. And around midnight, Brian and Clint meet up with another friend, Meredith Reed. The three of them end up going back to the Ugly Tuna Saloon, where there was a band playing that they planned to see. And at approximately 1:15 a.m., the three of them were caught on surveillance coming up the escalator to the entrance. Brian looks tipsy on the footage and was the first at the top of the escalator, and the other two were behind him. And as they enter, they disappear off camera.
So once they're all inside, Brian becomes separated. And Brian is next seen at 1:55 a.m., just 5 minutes before closing. He's recorded out front talking to two college-age girls. He's caught by the cameras out front. He's then seen heading back towards the entrance. And that's the last time he's ever been seen. And it said that he said he was going to go talk to the band. And the band has, I heard the band has no recollection of talking to him, but to me, that really doesn't mean anything. Whether he talked to
them. I mean, there were so many people, I can hardly imagine that they'd remember one person.
Yeah. Yeah, and Brian, he's a handsome guy, but he kind of has an everyman look to him.
Yeah, he really does. He just looks like anybody that you would kind of pass on the street. So, I mean,
yeah,
good for him in one aspect, but bad that nobody would really remember him.
Yeah, and yeah, me personally, I don't blame anyone for not remembering talking to him, because I think if you ask me, like, hey, did you talk to this guy the other night? I'm like, in a crowded bar, I'm like, maybe I did. I'm not too good with faces anyway, so.
I'm not good with faces or names. Heck, I can't even remember what I had for dinner last night, so I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't really think too much about the band not remembering him. So the bar closes at 2 a.m. Clint and Meredith are waiting out front and they don't see Brian. They call him but get no answer. They do a quick look over the bar, look around, see if Brian's anywhere. They see no sign of him. They try calling him again, still no answer. And at this point, they assume he just left without saying anything. So about 10 minutes after closing time, the surveillance camera shows Clint and Meredith going down the escalator and back to Meredith's car. And again, they assume like Brian just left and got home on his own.
Yeah, I mean, they're all in their 20s. I mean, they assume he just went back home. There's no reason to worry.
Yeah, did the old Irish goodbye.
Yes.
So, later on the next morning, Alexis tries calling Brian, but it goes straight to voicemail. And she doesn't feel concerned at this point. She knows that he had a big night. The previous night he was, you know, getting pretty drunk, and she figured, like, he's just sleeping it off. She continues calling him all throughout Saturday, still gets no answer. Sunday, she still hasn't heard from him, so she calls his father, Randy, to say that she can't get in touch with him. And, of course, they're supposed to be flying to Miami the next day, so she's like, what's going on here? And Randy tries to get a hold of Brian. He can't get a hold of him either. So Monday, Alexis goes to the airport, hoping Brian would just be there. And they would go on vacation. And Brian doesn't show up for that. And it's at that point he's reported missing. So the search obviously begins at the Ugly Tuna, which is since Brian is last sighted there. And they search all around. They search the back of the building. They search dumpsters. They don't see any sign of him or any trace of him. His apartment was about six blocks away from the Ugly Tuna Saloon. So when detectives go to his apartment, they find nothing there either. And his car is there in its regular spot. Everything was in order, like nothing appeared disturbed. And Yeah, so both Clint and Meredith are questioned by police, asked to take a polygraph, but Clint refuses to do so. And pretty much gets a lawyer right away. And the whole thing refusing to take a polygraph and getting a lawyer, that opinions on that go both ways.
Yeah, I can see it from both perspectives. Now, if I was being questioned, sure, I totally want a lawyer on my side. That's what they're there for. But looking in from somebody who's part of the family and he's not taking this polygraph or anything, a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, well, from the investigator, I understand it too. Like, the advice is always refuse a polygraph. Even though investigators will think that's even more suspicious, but polygraphs, they're not submittable in court. They're known to be unreliable, and they can easily give false readings. So, but
yeah, there's so many cases now that you look back and somebody's like, oh, they took the polygraph and passed, but then they turn out to actually have been a killer or something like that. Or they didn't take it and they're saying one thing or another thing. Really, it's just going to be twisted however they feel.
Yeah, or the,
it's need to be twisted.
It shows they failed, but they're completely innocent. And it turns out they took the polygraph right away and they're still under a high level of stress, and that's what it picks up.
Oh, absolutely. As somebody who has anxiety and has had to go through polygraphs for jobs, I mean, I've been sat there terrified and like, it's going to ding on something, but I swear I haven't done anything. But I mean, that's all it does is just measures your body's reaction.
Yeah. So, and I've had both reactions to that. Like, it depends on the way it's being presented. I don't know, I've had both reactions, like, oh, that is a little suspicious when I hear the detail that they got a lawyer and refuse a polygraph. But then, yeah, again, your advice, that's what you're advised to do no matter what. So,
for me, I kind of go neither way. I just kind of say, okay, he didn't do it. Now, I've heard rumors that he just kind of stopped helping police and stopped talking, which is a little bit weird for me. But just the decision to get a lawyer and not take a polygraph in and of itself isn't really damning.
Yeah, and it obviously caused people to look at Clint like, dude, what are you hiding? But police found no evidence that Clint would want to do anything to Brian. So the two girls that Brian was last seen talking to were questioned but never asked to take a polygraph. And yeah, after the night has disappeared, his phone, credit cards, or bank accounts have no activity.
Yeah, he just kind of, as many people say, just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth. But he walked into a bar and didn't come out, which is, to me, the most mind-boggling thing.
Yeah, so, and I re-listened to True Crime Garage's last coverage of this case, and they brought up a point that investigators, like, painstakingly watched the entire video, to the point where they identified every single person who entered and exited the bar, and everyone was accounted for except for Brian. And there was Nick on True Crime Garage said at one point there was one guy who was seen exited who they initially didn't see entering. They called him something like orange sweatshirt guy, because the guy left wearing an orange sweatshirt, but he hadn't come in. And when they tracked that guy down, they said, well, I had it with me, but I wasn't wearing it when I entered. I got cold in the bar and I put it on and I'm wearing it as I'm leaving. And they go back and look and they determine where he was, like who he was entering the bar. So it opens that theory is, did Brian bring like a jacket or something extra with him that he threw on and that's why he's not noticed leaving? Or I feel like they would have figured that out by this point, though.
I think it's certainly possible. I read somewhere on initial coverage that one of the cameras was standstill and the other had to be moved manually by some device within the bar to determine where it was looking. And I mean, there's the potential that he could have left and for whatever reason gotten missed by the cameras. I don't see that as likely given the escalator to go in and out. I mean, the escalator was focused on. They got pictures of everything all over the news and stuff showing him on the escalator with his friends. So, I mean, you're kind of seeing everybody that goes in and out. I don't see how you would just miss somebody.
Yeah. And there's a little confusion with me on the other exit, like the back exit. I hear that's a standard exit for like employees and other, and like the band and other. And I also heard of an emergency exit. I've seen some things that those two are the same one. They're like the same exit. And I've also heard that there are two separate exits.
As far as I was aware of the building, there was only the two exits. So the one main entrance by the escalators where the public was supposed to go in and out. And then there was the back entrance where employees were going in and out. Obviously, the public wasn't meant to be back there. But it also opened next to another property that was undergoing some kind of construction at the time, which I'm a sucker for a good conspiracy theory. My idea kind of leans towards, what if something happened and he went back that way and he got missed during construction? Maybe he passed out and something disastrous happened, and you see these weird cases where people are being left behind refrigerators for years or left in walls for years and just not noticed, which
that is one of the theories, is that he like what I'm seeing is that construction site was right outside the emergency exit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if that's one in the same with the back exit for the employees and the band, but yeah, the theory is there's one of the theories that he got out that door and fell into a hole in the construction site, and the hole was soon after covered with cement and he wasn't noticed. But what I'm hearing is there was no real big enough hole in the area that they wouldn't have seen, someone wouldn't have seen him before they covered him up.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, I'm a sucker for like human errors are a really big thing, and some people just don't pay attention. So
yeah,
there's always that possibility, but in all likelihood, I know it's kind of a rare chance that that would have actually happened.
Yeah, and I wonder if at this point they would have thought to bring out like ground detecting, like ground penetrating radar or whatever that's called.
Yes.
To like check the area.
But I'm not sure, obviously, because I never worked on the case. But they also have, now they've got dogs that are trained to locate bodies that are deep underground, or some dogs even can go on water and are supposedly able to detect when there's a body deep underwater or something like that, which would also be another option.
Yeah. There is the theory that he slipped out unnoticed and met with foul play somewhere. And the smiley face serial killer has been linked to him. I'm not too familiar with it. I haven't like really ever looked into who that guy was. But
there was nothing really set on the smiley face killer. I'm sure other people have done more research on it. But from what I know, there was these detectives from New York, I believe, who said that there's a lot of young men from the 1990s to 2010s that went missing and were found in bodies of water, obviously dead later on. And they're thinking that it was either a single serial killer or multiple serial killers who ended up going through and doing that. They were all in the Midwest, and obviously Ohio's in the Midwest. And so there was the idea that maybe he could be linked to that. But to me, just because there's a young man who happens to have died and is found in a body of water, that's not enough cause for me to say that it's linked. There may be something that they know that obviously we in the public don't know, but...
Yeah, well, also Brian has never been found, period, let alone in a body of water.
Exactly, which leads to the other thing. Apparently, his father, before he passed, because he's now also deceased, went to a psychic, and a psychic said that he was in water by a bridge. And I don't know if you've ever been to Columbus, but the Olentangy River runs straight through it, and I cannot even tell you how many bridges there are. So, I mean, does not narrow it down whatsoever.
Yeah, and from what I read, police put very little thought into this theory. That they feel this is still highly unlikely that he is a victim of this killer or group of killers.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how I feel so much about the smiley face killer theory in general, but linking him to it seems kind of odd. There's not enough data or evidence for me to go off of to link into that, especially because there is no body, which does leave the chance that maybe he did leave. I mean, his mom just died and he's going through finals. There's obviously a lot of stress on him. Now, it is odd, but there is the potential that maybe he just walked away.
Yeah, that is another one of those theories, like given everything that's been going on in his personal life. And I've also read somewhere, I believe this was in an anniversary article by the Columbus Monthly. I believe this is where I saw this. But there are some reports that soon before he went missing, like he was obviously depressed over his mother passing away. And have you heard this? Like, he told Alexis that she'd be better off without him.
I hadn't, like, thought, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he just went through a major life event. So, I mean, and still going through school. Obviously, Crime Junkie Podcast says this all the time. Like, you never really know somebody. And that's so true. I mean, everybody says that he was fine. And then he just went under some serious, serious stress. I mean, I can't imagine losing my mom. So, and at 27.
Yeah. I mean, and well, that kind of does open it up to a suicide theory. Yes. Where everyone's saying like, oh, he was obviously upset over losing his mother, but he had this trip with Alexis to look forward to. He had this, and I've like known people who, like last fall, a longtime friend of mine ended up taking his life. And it was one of those things where like no one saw it coming. Like everyone who knew him was like, oh, he was always happy. He never appeared to, like, he would get sad about the things like people get sad about. Like, you know, like if like some misfortune mm-hmm. happened. Like he would get like sad, like the way anyone can get sad. But overall depression to the point of being suicidal, like no one saw it with this guy. So I know it is totally possible that
he could have taken
his life and no one would have really seen it coming.
Yeah, I have a couple things with that. I mean, obviously there's the big mental health awareness stuff going on now, and back then you didn't really have that. So maybe he did have some depression and obviously a lot of stress going on, and maybe that's what he felt like the best option was. But my thing is when most people choose to go that route, I mean, there's a body. I mean, you gotta find something. Most men, statistically anyway, most men who commit suicide use some sort of lethal means, like a gun, in which case he'd probably be in his home or something, or there would be a body somewhere. I mean, I can't imagine he just walked into the water and floated away. Yeah,
would the current be enough to like wash him away to where he would never be found?
It's certainly possible because with the rain, I don't know what the weather was back then, which would be something to look into and to see what kind of patterns.
I can't think of what the weather was like. I mean, I haven't seen anything particular on what the weather was like that night.
Yeah, if it rained, that would be something to look into. But I do know in different parts of the Olentangy River, it gets shallow enough where if there's something big and it doesn't get caught underneath, I mean, it's going to get bumped over rocks and somebody's going to find it somewhere. But that said, I mean, there's always bodies popping up from the river at some point, whether someone just eventually floats up from the bottom or someone was tied down or what. I mean, there's totally the potential that if he was put there or if he did commit suicide and end up falling into the river, there's the potential that a body could certainly still be there.
Yeah. There's the theory that something happened to him inside the bar. Whether he passed out and died from alcohol poisoning, or whether someone harmed him inside the bar and killed him, and the bar staff was worried about lawsuits, so they snuck him out the emergency exit and disposed of his body.
I mean, I suppose I haven't heard that one, but I suppose that's possible. I mean, if someone dies when you're with them, please call 911. I don't know who's listening,
but don't try to hide the body. It does not go over well.
But the ugly tuna was very cooperative with police. Like right away, as soon as police showed up, they were like, "Yeah, whatever you need to do." And I'm hearing they even closed down the bar for a few days to let the police come in and do their thing. But by the time the police got involved, like the entire weekend had passed. So if we're gonna entertain the theory that something happened to him in the bar, a weekend is, I'm sure, more than enough time to cover it up.
Yeah, so a weekend certainly is. I mean, but that's assuming you'd have to wait around to make sure that everybody left the bar at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then you'd have to get a body out by some means and then find a way to dispose of it.
And the entire crowd that was in there, like no one, everyone who saw it can keep that secret.
Yeah. There's certainly the possibility that maybe people were drunk enough and they never noticed, but I can't imagine that. Like, if your friend passed out, or if you just noticed somebody passed out or bleeding for whatever reason, I mean, I would hope somebody would say something. I mean, there is in psychology a couple different ideas of oh, I forget the term, but where it's like groupthink, and if somebody doesn't help, then nobody helps, and not really willing to do anything if nobody else is willing to do anything. So I guess
it's kind of the I'm thinking of like what they came up with the Kitty Genevieve case.
Yes.
Where all these people turns out like you look more into that case, like what's been uncovered about it. Like there's a ton of myths from that particular case, but the big one that came from it was all these people heard and saw her being killed and no one did anything. Assuming either, oh, it's none of my business, or someone else will.
Exactly.
Relating
to this case, though, I mean, in the Kitty Genovese case, these people did get talked to later, and they said, oh, yeah, I heard something. But, I mean, if the police had talked to the people who were in the bar that night and nobody saying anything, I think it's more likely that it probably didn't happen there.
Yeah, so that theory is, I would give more weight to the smiley face killer theory than something happening to him inside the bar and everyone is able to keep quiet about it all these years.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I mean, and I'm not a big fan of the smiley face killer theory either. But my guess is that either the camera missed him somehow, and between the 6 blocks back to his apartment, something happened. Or,
yeah.
I mean, I love the idea of something happening and him being right next door. I mean, to me, it just seems to make kind of weird sense. This whole case is weird, and maybe that's exactly what happened, and it's just a very odd case. But I also saw down the line, Brian's girlfriend Alexis would call his phone, just trying to see if there's no body, there's nothing from him. Maybe there's the potential he's still there. And I saw that in September of that year, I believe it might have been right around that fall time, and the phone actually rang. It rang 3 times before getting cut off, and that got traced back to an area in Columbus as well. Now, he would have been in the OSU area, which would have been kind of in the middle of downtown. Pickerington would have been on the east, southeast-ish kind of side. And then where the cell phone pinged would have been in Hilliard, which would have been on the west side. So yeah. It doesn't quite make sense why his phone would ping over there. But I guess maybe that's the idea, that maybe he is trying to find his way out. Maybe he was bunking with a friend or bunking with somebody from that night and starting over.
Yeah, but thing about his phone ringing after every time before going straight to voicemail,
mm-hmm.
The cell provider said that was just a glitch.
Yes, I did see that too, which I mean is certainly possible. I mean, technology certainly has its failures, but it's also a possibility. I mean, maybe he did have it with him, or maybe something happened and maybe it was a glitch and maybe his phone's on his body somewhere in Hilliard.
Yeah. And so there is now the theory that he voluntarily walked away to start a new life somewhere, which is incredibly difficult to do given that there is no activity on his credit cards or his bank account. And have you heard experts talk about this, like how to successfully disappear?
I have not, but I have my own theories on it.
Yeah, well, what they say is it's not really something you can just do on a whim. It's you have to have like money stashed away. You have to be planning it for a really long time to be able to successfully pull it off.
I would agree, except I also think that this was in 2006 and technology was certainly not where it is today. And there are those people who have done it who all of a sudden, 40 years later, they're found and they have this life somewhere in the middle of Idaho or something. And they just walked away. I mean, there's certainly the potential, rare, but certainly in my mind, there's a possibility that happened.
Yeah, but given the thing about him being like wanting to live a Jimmy Buffett-esque lifestyle, like maybe he escaped to a Caribbean or tropical paradise somewhere, he's living on a beach somewhere, you know. I'm not sure how he would have pulled that off, how he would have gotten away with, I don't know, like if he ended up like taking a train or a bus or a flight somewhere, like someone, I mean, even if he, like I said, he does have that everyman look.
Mm-hmm.
I figured someone would still have to, like, this is a big enough case, someone would probably still remember him. Or,
I mean, I'm doing air quotes, nobody can see it, but I'm doing air quotes. There have been sightings of him as far as Sweden. So, I mean, I certainly don't think that in this post 9/11 world that we're living in, that he would have been able to get out of the country without someone being like, oh, hey, you're flagged as a missing person. So it's not my favorite theory. I think that there's the potential that he did walk away. But, I mean, he did have that everyday look. I mean, he could be living somewhere now. And
yeah, and there's some photos of him where he has a beard and he can kind of change his... Given that he has that everyman look, if he does something like grow a beard, he can look completely different. And yeah, so I mean, it could be kind of easy for him to disguise himself and no one recognizes him.
I mean, but even if you move outside of Ohio, I know more places are covering this case and stuff like that, but I mean, even talking about it in Ohio, not a lot of people have really heard about it. There's the potential that nobody even knows if you move outside of the state.
I guess that's possible. And like you mentioned briefly earlier, his father, Randy, was killed in a freak accident in September of 2008. What was that, during a lightning storm that happened?
Yeah, there was a big storm and apparently really a freak accident. A branch fell off a tree and hit him in the head.
Yeah. So his obituary was published online and there was a comment on it that said, "Dad, I love you, Brian." And in parentheses, U.S. Virgin Islands. So that was investigated. It turned out it was a hoax comment. It was written from a public computer in Franklin County, where Columbus is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, I'm really just as stumped as the first day that I heard this. It sounds like the beginning of a bad joke. Someone walks in a bar and doesn't come out. And I mean, to me, it just boggles my mind. There's a lot of potentials and none of them seem to really fit the case.
Yeah, it sounds to me like the premise for a Harlan Coben novel.
Yes.
Like this is a guy disappears from a bar but is never seen leaving. Like, that sounds like the synopsis for the next Harlan Coben novel.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. Someone's got an idea now. I mean,
yeah, but unlike, but with that, his novel will have a conclusion.
Yes,
and in the end, it will seem crazy, but in the end, he's one of my favorite authors. He'll have it somehow make sense, but there is still no answer in this case.
Unless someone comes forward or something's found.
Or his remains are found, or he's found alive somewhere. I'm trying to think back, I want to think back to his dinner with his father on that night. Like, if other than his father thinking he seemed really tired from the week he had just had, if anything else seemed out of the ordinary, like if that was like a goodbye dinner that Brian was planning on having.
Yeah, you can look at it in so many lights. I mean, if you look at it in a light, like maybe he was going through this depression, losing his mom 3 weeks earlier and 2 weeks later after losing his mom, he has to go through all this stuff. He certainly could have done that. Or there's the potential that maybe he really was coping with it and something crazy just happened.
Yeah, but the thought of your solution for dealing with the loss of your mom is then to leave your dad and leave him with more heartbreak.
Sure. And I mean, he had a younger brother too, who I mean is now the only surviving family member right now.
Yeah, his younger brother Derek.
Yes.
So it's one of these. This is what's so fascinating with this case is it seems impossible for him to disappear the way they did, the way he did. And because of that, they're like, we can entertain all these theories of what's going on, what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now we're kind of stuck. There's no one thing until.
Yeah. To me, the theories I discount the theory that something happened to him in the bar and he's connected to the smiley face killer. But I mean, those are really the only ones I don't give as much credence. Like, any of the other theories can seem just as plausible as the other one to me.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some information that we're missing. Whether Clint Florence holds it, I'm not quite sure, but somebody has something that we're missing, and there's a piece to the puzzle where we can't fit it all in.
Yeah, and from what I read, the other friend, Meredith, from what I understand, fully cooperated. I don't know what information she revealed can, like, really point to any one, point in any one direction. Maybe I just didn't look hard enough. Like, I haven't found too much on what she had to say afterwards.
Yeah, I think she kind of just cooperated and then just kind of, like, the girls that he talked to outside of the bar, I mean, just kind of gave what she knew and then nothing really happened. But because she complied, there's really no questions surrounding her like Clint. So because Clint didn't continue working with the police, there's always this air of confusion with it.
Yeah, but Clint is still primarily seen with Meredith. And I figure if they were really going to look harder at Clint, they would push Meredith more. given that he's on camera with her, he's seen waiting around with her and then leaving with her. So I've from what I saw, they can't really find anything to link Clint to want to do anything to Brian. And if I figured if they really did, they would be pushing Meredith harder, which I haven't seen anything that they are.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think they probably have really no suspects in the case. I mean, especially being over 10 years later, I mean, there's not much. There's certainly no evidence left anymore, and they're probably
talk about suspect. There's no evidence that a crime occurred. Yeah. So I don't. So
it's not like you found a bloody T-shirt or a knife.
A trace of his blood or a trace of his DNA. I don't know what they can really fully go on with this.
Yeah, there's really nothing, which is what boggles my mind so much.
He just literally vanished into thin air, it seems.
Yeah, there's a quote from Sherlock Holmes that talks about once you have eliminated the impossible, anything that's left, no matter how improbable, is what you have, what the answer has to be. So, I mean, unfortunately, we can't even eliminate the impossible because there's so many different options. You can't cut out anything. And
really, I think,
I'm not quite sure if this case is going to get any kind of resolution anytime soon until something's found.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm with the type of podcast I do, I'm fascinated by unsolved cases. I'm more fascinated by missing persons just because they're open to more theories and more discussion. And to me, this, I know Maura Murray is probably considered the holy grail of missing persons cases. To me, this one is right up there.
Yeah. Because, and I'm surprised more people haven't heard of it. I mean,
yeah. So, I don't know. Do you have any final thoughts?
If you have an idea, then let us know.
Yeah, you the listener. You can reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram. I am at Still Unknown Pod on Twitter, Still Unknown Podcast on Instagram. Do you want to give your details where people can reach you if they'd like to reach you?
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter or send me a message. It's at Whining Writer, WINING Writer. And I mean, let me know. I'm totally interested in this case, and I really want to see at least some kind of development, hopefully in the future. I don't want it to sit there for another 10 plus years without anything happening.
Exactly. And I think that's all. I could talk about this case forever with anyone, but I think we covered the basics and our thoughts on it. And yeah, Shannon, it was an absolute joy to have you join me. I'm so happy you got to.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. Obviously, I am fascinated by the case, but I mean, it's great to do something a little bit different. Right now, I'm working with the police department and writing, and I love being able to talk about it. So maybe something in the future.
Yeah, and I'll of course keep up with this case if there's any new developments, any new information comes out. I'd love to have you back on to talk more about it again. Or if you'd ever like to join me for another case, I'd love to have you back.
Well, just let me know. And I mean, obviously with this pandemic, I am good whenever.
Oh, same here. So, all right, Shannon, thank you for joining me today, and I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks so much. You have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
I want to thank Shannon again for joining me for this episode. If you would like to get in touch with her yourself, you can, again, reach her on Twitter at WhiningWriter. I will link to her Twitter in the show notes. And I want to thank you for listening. And stay tuned for a promo for a podcast called Mask of Sanity. And I will talk to you all next week. Take care, everyone, and stay well.
Hey there, true crime friends. It's Melanie Peterson, the host of Mask of Sanity. Join me as I take you through the cases of some of the world's most notorious killers and the brave men and women who risked it all to capture them. You can find Mask of Sanity wherever you listen to podcasts and hear all about the calculated madness of some of the world's most brutal killers who hid behind the Mask of Sanity. You won't want to miss this. Until next time, stay safe, friends.